God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance tonight. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. The restrooms are in the back of this room. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would like to welcome you. And welcome. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Is anyone visiting from out of town or new to the meeting? Hey, Matt.
Hey, Matt.
Welcome.
At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This is from the foreword to the first edition of the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are discussing steps 8 and 9. Please welcome our panel. We have Blue from Simple Actions and Diane from Chesapeake.
Came to believe
women's meeting in Chesapeake. I will read the first paragraph on page 80, and then the panel will share for a few minutes each on the reading. Page 80. The chances are that we have domestic troubles. Perhaps we are mixed up with women in a fashion we wouldn't care to have advertised. We doubt if, in this respect, alcoholics are fundamentally much worse than other people. But drinking does complicate sex relations in the home. After a few years with an alcoholic, a wife gets worn out, resentful, and uncommunicative. How could she be anything else? The husband begins to feel lonely, sorry for himself. He commences to look around in the nightclubs or their equivalent for something besides liquor. Perhaps he is having a secret and exciting affair with the girl who understands. In fairness, we must say that she may understand, but what are we going to do about a thing like that? A man so involved often feels very remorseful at times, especially if he is married to a loyal and courageous girl who has literally gone through hell for him. Who wants to go first?
I'll go first.
Okay.
Diane, alcoholic.
Hi, Diane.
First, thank you for having me. I really appreciate that, just being able to share. Because I really believe in one amongst many. That's one of my favorite phrases from the big book. I'm just another drunk trying to help other drunks the best way I can. For this passage, it's really funny because, well, I date women, and when I came in the first time, my first sponsor advised me not to get into a relationship for my first year, and particularly the girl I was talking to at the time, I didn't listen, and I got into that relationship, and during that, it just was, this whole thing happened. I wasn't drinking when I got with her, but definitely practicing marijuana maintenance. She smoked a lot, so I felt like, well, if she smokes a lot, then I just, you know, I need to connect with her in some way, because she's not communicative with me when I'm just trying to be sober. When she met me, I was drinking and things like that. So I really tried to, I kept finding myself trying to change to make it fit, and I just didn't feel right. And when it got down to it, she basically expressed that she didn't really love me the way she thought she did, which probably, I was probably getting on the nerves. So when the girl who understood did come around, I did step out in that relationship, and that was what preceded my drinking again after being dry, quote unquote, for a year and a half. When I came back in, it just always stands out to me because it was this paragraph and another one in there where it's like, we're not supposed to go and, tell them everything that we did and the names and numbers and accounts and all that stuff just to relieve our own guilt, and shame and put that on someone else. And that's exactly what I did because I wasn't reading the book, and the book was kicking around in my back seat that whole time. And I was like, the answers are right here. It's right here in black and white in my face. I have it in my possession. And I just didn't crack the book to read it. I didn't even get a chance to misunderstand because I didn't look at it. And it floored me. And that was one of the first things that really kept me plugged in this time around. But I was just like, if I had been listening to this lady and reading this book, I wouldn't have been through all that. I wouldn't have went about things the way that I did. I would hope not. I would at least have other options. And I didn't do that. So it's just 8 and 9, especially in the big book, it's just always kind of special to me because that's a big part of why I went back out and how I got back in. Thanks, let me share.
Blue alcoholic.
Blair.
Blue.
I sort of say this like a lot when I share, but before I got sober, I'd always felt like if you felt the way that I felt, then you would drink the way I drank. And before I ever drank or did anything, I had girl problems. And that's, my problem is not with alcohol. It never has been. It's just a problem with me not feeling okay with Blue. Not me not being able to just sit with myself and appreciate, who Blue is. And unfortunately, that meant that if you came in contact with me, especially while I was drinking and doing other stuff, you were probably going to get hurt. And, it was so crazy because while it was happening, like I had no, there was no, I would go from a relationship to a relationship and I just wouldn't tell the first one that I was leaving the relationship. There was no, there was no end or beginning to my relationships. It was just sort of a fluid, Blue just needs to be all right. So I'm gonna drink and I'm gonna do drugs and I'm gonna also seek out the attention from the opposite sex. And that resulted in a lot of this. Thankfully, and also not thankfully, like I'll have to live with a lot of this stuff, but my sponsor, when I got sober and I was going through the steps, he said, what are you gonna do? Go back and try to be a better boyfriend to to most of these women. There was only, there was only one like real long-term relationship during that time when I first before I first got sober. And it was a similar experience to what Candace was saying. I didn't get right into it right when what Diane was I was just talking to Mark about Candace. Diane was saying and she didn't even notice and he didn't say
It's crazy.
anything.
I'm like, yeah, he's talking to Candace. What are we talking about?
I didn't get right into a relationship when I first got sober. I had already been in one and then I went away and then I came back and that one was like ready to just come right back in. And I was not ready for that one to come back in, but it came in and, immediately like I wanted to go to the psych ward after getting back from rehab and being sober for 3 months. And I stayed with that person on and off in that, oil and water relationship for the next 2 years. Until eventually that relationship ended and I went back out. And during that time, it's crazy. Like she was the one that I probably hurt the most throughout all my relationships. And I don't think I ever even got to make an amends to her during that time because I was too entirely overwhelmed with like making sure that she was happy and not overwhelmed with going through the steps and making sure that I was right. And And then, I get sober this time 8 years ago, and I'm going back through the steps. And again, my sponsor says, anyone that's been in here between then and now, any girls, don't worry about going back and making amends to them. You're just going to do more damage than good, and your motives are probably not right, and they probably weren't. And she was like the only one that I hung on to. And I remember there was like this one time I was a few years sober, and she reached out to me. And I was like, I'm just going to go for this amends, and I'm not going to tell my sponsor. I didn't tell my sponsor. I went and met up with her, and I couldn't find where I'd written down my harms towards her in my amends book. And so I just winged it, and it just wasn't, it wasn't, it came across like really just not, it sort of just like diminished like the whole relationship I ever had with this person. And I don't know what she's, she may or may not be one of us, but ever since then, it's like I can't reach back out to her and try to make another amends. And it's just, if I had just heeded my sponsor's advice and just not gone back and made amends to any of my partners, I probably would have been in a better scenario. But gosh, yeah, that was a huge mistake on my part. That's well said.
All right, we're going to turn over to page 82. If we have no such complication, there is plenty we should do at home. Sometimes we hear an alcoholic say that the only thing he needs to do is to keep sober. Certainly he must keep sober, for there will be no home if he doesn't. But he is yet a long way from making good to the wife or parents whom for years he has so shockingly treated. Passing all understanding is the patience mothers and wives have had with alcoholics. Had this not been so, many of us would have no homes today, would perhaps be dead. The alcoholic is like a tornado roaring his way through the lives of others. Hearts are broken. Sweet relationships are dead. Affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. We feel a man is unthinking when he says that sobriety is enough. He is like the farmer who came up out of his cyclone cellar to find his home ruined. To his wife, he remarked, "Don't see anything the matter here, Ma. Ain't it grand? The wind stopped blowing."
Dan, alcoholic.
Hey, Diane.
And, it's funny because for me, there are days where that's all I got is to stay sober that day. And I can't even do that by myself. I have a daily reprieve. I have to ask for that help to do that much. But it gets to a point for me where if I'm working this program, at least trying to work it to the best of my ability, that's not my biggest issue in the current moment. The obsession to drink has been lifted from me, thankfully. But that doesn't mean that I'm not an alcoholic anymore. I have to remember that every day is a step one day, because if it's not, then I'm screwed. So with this, it's like, I think the point that they're trying to get to here, I interpret it, is that that's not all that there is to drinking. Alcohol is only mentioned in the first step. The other 11 are about me getting in contact with some type of higher something that's greater than me, so I'm not the last stop on the street. If it's up to me, the whole thing's up in flames, and I'm just gonna burn this mother down. That's where it ends up for me. But when I let go, and my higher power, I choose to call God, when I let God just be God and stop trying to play God in my life, it's easier for me to stay sober, and it's not my first thought. There are things that I've been through. I got sober at I came back in the rooms at 24, I'll put it like that. So I was young. I didn't know anything about life for real, so I feel like AA has taught me how to be an adult. Like I learned how to be a good adult here, hopefully. But it's really helped me to navigate some weird situations. Like I've been through loss. I got laid off from a job in the rooms. And I didn't think about drinking. My first thought was, man, the people that fired me are crying because it was a contract thing. They didn't want to do it, but my position got eliminated from the company, so my job didn't exist anymore. So I was jobless at that moment. And instead of being like, why are you crying? Like, y'all let me go. I'm the one with no check now. I was just like, man, it's okay. Like, I'll figure something out. Stuff like that. That doesn't happen to me in my normal scenario. I'm very hyper focused on myself. I'm very all about Diane. It's just like, man, I look at my definition of depression, which I have been, diagnosed with for most of my life now, is just the opposite of arrogance. I'm just so consumed with all of my flaws. I'm still focused on me, me, me. It's still selfish and self-centered. And when I let go and stop doing that, the steps helped me do that. I didn't just do that on my own. Working the steps with a sponsor and with you guys and coming to meetings and fumbling through it and completely messing things up, but learning to be humble enough to ask for help. All of that stuff comes with me working the steps. So staying sober, that, like I said, that's the first step of 12. That's not even 10% of the program. So when you look at it like that, staying sober is not the only thing. The rest of it helps me live a sober life. And I think that comes up in one of the other questions. So I'll stop there. Thank you.
Alcoholic. Yeah, this, I mean, that I love that little don't see anything the matter here, mine, grand, the wind stop blowing. That applies, that applied to my life dramatically. Back in the day, I getting screaming matches with my mom, smashing stuff, breaking stuff, pushing her, all sorts of craziness, not storming out of the house, not showing up for days. And then I come back and I just, like crash on the couch. And it was just like, and I'd probably eat whatever, was in the fridge or whatever. Expect her to give me cigarettes because I didn't have any cigarettes. And it was just like, what, why? And then she'd be look at like, just sort of like afraid, like tiptoeing around me, like afraid to even talk to me. And it's like, what's wrong? Like, I'm home. Everything's fine. I'm calm now. We're done with the fight. Everything's good. But no, it wasn't, and I don't have those types of situations today. But I do have smaller versions of that today. I'll be yelling at the dog. I'm complaining about my friend in front of my partner. Just sort of just in this pessimistic mood. And then I'll just be like, all right, what are we watching tonight? And it's just like, no, that's not, I can't just come in here and just bring you down, and then just expect you to just be okay with that. Like, that you don't, it's sort of like what I was saying before, like, just because I feel like I have to do something, like, that doesn't make it right. And most of the time it makes it wrong. Whatever makes me comfortable or feel like I'm okay, not feel like I'm okay, but whatever makes me comfortable is typically not what is going to make somebody else comfortable. And then, yeah, I mean, sweet relationships or dead affections have been uprooted. Selfish and inconsiderate habits have kept the home in turmoil. This stuff doesn't happen like all at once. Maybe back in the day, like when I was drinking, I'd do something dramatic, and then, it's, that end the whole relationship. But today, this does not happen all at once. It happens from me, not doing what I'm supposed to be doing in AA. Me not, working through a four step routinely. Me not making amends routinely. Me not reaching out to the newcomer before or after the meeting routinely. Like, keeping it going. I can't see it. Like, I start to develop this sort of like callus over me. I start to isolate. I start to fall back into like my habits and my hobbies and my distractions. Really, is what they are. And I think, like, as long as if I keep doing, what makes me happy, then eventually the people around me are going to be happy. So we're going back to what I was saying before, and that's not the case. Like, a lot of what I have to do in order to make sure that these relationships don't die or get uprooted involves me making a lot of self-sacrifice and a lot of commitments to things I don't want to do. And it's not something that happens overnight. It's something that is typically very gradual. And I don't even notice it, and that's the problem with it. That's all I'll say.
All right, we'll continue reading on page 83. Yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. We must take the lead. A remorseful mumbling that we are sorry won't fill the bill at all. We ought to sit down with the family and frankly analyze the past as we now see it. being very careful not to criticize them. Their defects may be glaring, but the chances are that our own actions are partly responsible. So we clean house with the family, asking each morning in meditation that our Creator show us the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. The spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Unless one's family expresses a desire to live upon spiritual principles, we think we ought not to urge them. We should not talk incessantly to them about spiritual matters. They will change in time. Our behavior will convince them more than our words. We must remember that 10 or 20 years of drunkenness would make a skeptic out of anyone.
Diane alcoholic. This one is kind of like almost like AA gold, right? Like I've heard this so many times in so many different meetings and things. But it's the spiritual life is not a theory. Like I believe that the book is basically a guide for me to have a spiritual lifestyle. That's the whole point. When I first came in here, well, when I came back in, I had 3 part-time jobs. Like I was a college student, hungry, had no money, but I was working literally all day. And, the days that I could go to meetings, I made sure I got to a meeting, but the days that it's just days I couldn't make it to meetings, and I was kind of worried about that. And my sponsor at the time, she said, you know what, you need to learn how to live. You got to learn how to live this now, just because of your situation. Like, if not, you're going to go back out if you don't start, getting this spiritual part in you. And we she had me reading from the 24 Hours a Day book, which is not it's not AA approved literature, but it was something that was supplemental to the text, just kind of like daily readings. And I had to read, I think it's like September 27th or 29th or something like that. I had to read that every day. I read that every day for like maybe like the first 2 years of my sobriety, man. It was crazy, but it was talking about the spiritual, spiritual experience, honest, open-minded, and willing. That's how I can start to live a spiritual lifestyle. And that helped change my life. That saved my life. That saved my life. I had to find some type of contact connection with something greater than me to keep me from wallowing in the self-pity and, being defensive and all this stuff like that. Like in here, their defects may be glaring. Well, yeah, if I've been, a butthole for years. I mean, my parents were, when I went back out, I got arrested, man. And I didn't get in any trouble. I grew up, I was like an honor student. Like I was a church girl. Like I was not that person. I was not cool by any means. Like I had no suspensions or nothing, like squeaky clean. And my parents were living in Japan at the time. And I'm the youngest of 3 girls and they're in Japan. And my sisters have to call them and say, well, how does bail or bond work? Like we didn't even know the difference between the two. They just got a call from me in the middle of the night from Colette, that I'm in jail and I need to get a ride home or they're not gonna let me out. That kind of stuff. So if my mom asks me some questions or she makes like a little remark here or there in the beginning, I can't be mad about that. I can't be mad at that. They weren't what do you like, it was probably the middle of the night over there for them, getting that kind of phone call. And that's just one instance. That's just one instance of my drinking causing harm and emotional harm to others and those closest to me. It says that we hurt those the closest, the ones that love us the most, we hurt them the most. I've really come to know that today. And just because I'm sober today does not mean that I don't have to make any more amends. I do stuff all the time. I'm a human. I live every day. If I'm alive, there's a possibility that I might do something that I need to make right with somebody, or at least try to. So again, it's less. The more that I practice these principles, it becomes less. It's a smaller amount, but I have to be grounded in the fact that I can't delude myself and think that I'm just perfect now. So it's always funny in this, and even like things like the family afterward and stuff like that, where it's like, oh, they're trying to lead their family spiritually and all this stuff. I'm like, dude, you're the drunk. How am I going to come in here and try to tell y'all how to live life? And I clearly didn't know how to live it well because that's how I ended up here. I got a little bit of an answer and now I know everything. It's that arrogance, man, that alcoholic arrogance, yo. It's crazy. But I try not to live in that today. I just take it one day at a time and try to live my life on a spiritual basis. How can I be a better use of service to you and your children today? That's what I say in the morning, and I keep it moving. and something comes along where I get to do that. Thanks.
He's getting this blue alcoholic. Yeah, that very first sentence, yes, there is a long period of reconstruction ahead. Sort of going back to what I was saying before, my mom, she was the one who bore the most of the brunt of my drinking and using. She was always she got sober when I was 10, through Alcoholics Anonymous. She's been sober ever since. And so she had to like bear witness to what was going on in front of her, like directly. My dad, he was an alcoholic. He ended up dying from DUI. And then me, like following, like right in his footsteps directly. And whereas my dad could leave the house and disappear, I, was with her. And so she had to just watch as I was just going downhill constantly, for years. And lots of damage was done. Lots of, every time I called her when I was drinking, it was always because I needed something. I needed her to get me out of jail. I needed her to drive me somewhere. I needed her to, give me some money so I could pay this dude off so that he wouldn't come to the house and try to shoot me. It was always something that I needed. And so for the first few years in recovery, like I kept sort of like the same motif. Like I'd only ever call her, on occasion, once a month or whatever, typically whenever I needed something. And one day, my sponsor said, "Why don't you just try calling her, like, regularly and checking up on her?" And I did. And what was funny was like I started calling her regularly, and every time she'd pick up, she would be like, I'm just scared to pick up the phone. I'm just scared you're gonna, I'm scared. Like, I still have, she said I have PTSD, from every time you used to call. I'm just worried just every time I see you call. But I just pushed through that. I kept calling, and I still call her every day. And that thought never even crosses her mind, I'm sure. Now she calls me when she's hasn't heard from me in a couple of days, and she's like, "What? Why haven't you been calling?" And so that's been like a just a direct example of that period of reconstruction. Like I'd been sober for like 3 years, and she was still saying that she had PTSD whenever I call. The spiritual life is not a theory we have to live unless one's family expresses a desire. That sort of creeps into our relationship from time to time, and it can be kind of tricky. Like, we're both in a program or whatever, but constantly I'm comparing what am I doing what versus what she's doing. And a lot of times, like earlier today, I told her, I was like, "It sounds like you have resentment." But I have to be very sparing with saying language like that when I'm talking to her, because she does not want to talk about that type of stuff. And that's something that was ingrained in me early on. Like, I need to know my place in all my relationships. So I need to be a brother to my sisters. One of my sisters is sort of, she's displays symptoms of this. And I need to show up for her just like I would any other, just like my other sister. Like I can't be putting pressure on her, telling her she needs to do this, needs to do that. I can't go to my partner and, tell her, "Why don't you try doing an inventory? Why don't you do a fears inventory, Cheyenne?" Because she is, she doesn't. It's up to everybody's on their own journey. Everybody's trying to just get through this thing, and I can't be and bestowing my will upon people. And that's what I'm basically what I'm doing when I'm trying to tell somebody who's not in the program what to do, or somebody that doesn't ask for help what to do. So yeah, that's good.
All right, still on page 83. There may be some wrongs we can never fully right. We don't worry about them if we can honestly say to ourselves that we would right them if we could. Some people cannot be seen. We send them an honest letter. And there may be a valid reason for postponement in some cases. But we don't delay if it can be avoided. We should be sensible, tactful, considerate, and humble without being servile or scraping. As God's people, we stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone.
Dan, alcoholic, that line was big for me as God's people. We stand on our feet. We don't crawl before anyone, because usually, I would look at stuff where it's like, oh, it's all my fault. It's all my fault. It's all my fault. I'm a bad person. I'm a bad daughter. I struggled with suicidal thoughts and attempts when I was younger. I just always felt this feeling of like not belonging or this low self-worth or whatever. For some reason, I don't know still. But I just remember having that from like my earliest childhood memories. I just remember feeling that way. So me being predisposed to be that way, I just was used to that. So making amends, it just felt like more apologies. So on one hand, that part was kind of, in a weird way, it was almost a relief for me, because I'm like, oh, I'm used to saying I'm sorry. I can do that. But it wasn't that. It's me giving an account of, look, I've wronged you in this way, or letting them tell me how they feel, giving them the floor to express their concerns or whatever to me about that. And I'm gonna do the best that I can to make that right with you. How can I make that right with you? I can't go to them and say, this is what I'm gonna do to make it right. And some things, like if I owe you money, I'm gonna pay you back to make it right. That's simple. But other things, like, how can I make this right with you? And that part was kind of like, ooh, okay. I'm not just gonna give myself 30 lashes every day, because that still doesn't help you at all. I'm still not. It's weird. It's weird. That's just the way it was in my head. It's weird. I would be okay with punishing myself, but not standing accountable for my actions. I'm gonna punish myself. When I was a kid, I remember I got on punishment one time for something stupid. I was like 8, and I took my TV out of my room, and my parents were like, what are you doing? I was like, well, I'm a bad daughter, like I don't deserve my TV. And my sisters were like, get a grip, like she doesn't want to get in trouble. Like, I really felt that way. I was like, no, like I don't deserve it, and I just it's that's how I would do. But it's like, that's not What if that's not the punishment that they had for me for whatever I did? It might have been, no TV for a week. It might have been I can't play outside this weekend or what have you. I don't, again, me stepping out the way and letting God work through the situation however he sees fit. For me, it's like with my amends, I was blessed to have some really positive experiences. Like even like two of the hardest amends I've ever made, they actually received it well, and they wished me well, in my recovery and things like that. But that's because I had been around and been working enough for them to see a change in me. And I can't make people see a change. That goes back to the skeptic thing from the other line. But it's like, if I'm working it, people will see it. They'll see it and they'll feel it. It's people that I might not have been able to see, they moved out of town or whatever. But if it came up, it was like, okay, I met with my sponsor, I did my eighth step, we went over my things, I'm praying, and it's like when the time comes, I'm willing to make this amends whenever it presents itself. And they always found a way to present themselves in some weird way, just miraculously. So it was interesting how that happened. But I'm grateful for the experiences that I had. A lot of people that I've talked to have had similar experiences like that. Some have not. It's everybody's journey is their own, but I'm not groveling before anybody. I learned how to keep my head held high and face life on life's terms, whether that's good or bad or ugly in between. That's what this program has taught me to do. Thanks.
Thanks. Blue alcoholic.
Me?
Yeah, I mean, I'll just, there's a couple stories here, but just to address the first sentence, there may be some wrongs we can never fully right. As I mentioned before, my dad, he passed when I was 18, before I ever got sober this time. And so obviously there was no way for me to go to him. Me and him used to go, we used to go on some adventures, some more friendly adventures than parental adventures. Lots of, mixed use between us. Me getting stuff from his mistress and me selling stuff to his friends, and it was a wild ride me and my dad had. And like looking from the outside, a lot of people would probably see that as like, he was a horrible father or whatever, but for me, I know he was just like me. Like he just was doing the next thing that he felt like he had to do to be okay. And there was a lot of things that I'd done to wrong him over the years. And that's what all this is trying to get at. Like there's nowhere in here does it say I take responsibility for my 60% of the blame. Nowhere in here does it say, you know, let's do a comparison battle on who was more at fault. It's just about me putting down the things that I've harmed him. And if his list is way longer than mine and he never gives it to me, whoever he is in the situation, it's okay because I'm not going into this expecting that. And so with my dad, you know, it's not like a crazy story. I just wrote, my sponsor told me to write him a letter and like stick it under my pillow and sleep on it for the night or something. But this other story, was one of my friends. I had some interesting friends growing up. They would get with the people that I had been with. It was just a crazy, crazy friendship situation we had. And so one of them, I remember I had to make amends to, because, you know, he was a wealthier kid and he offered me a lot of opportunities and I definitely took it for granted. And I used him for a lot of that and wasn't very appreciative. And so I had to make amends to this dude who literally a week after my girlfriend broke up with me, he was sleeping with her. So I had to make amends to him. And there's been other stories like that. My other friend who liked the girl I was with, like it's, but that's the thing. Like I'm not going into this thinking about that at all. My amends pretty much only went one of two ways on the front end. It was either sad or awkward. And those ones were definitely more on the awkward side. But then coming out of it, like the output from that situation is just like it's relief, it's happiness, it's peace. Like I can talk to this person, I can be in the same room as this person. And it's not a big deal. Doesn't mean I have to be best friends with them. It just means that, you know, at least my side of the road is clear. And what actually ends up happening is like these people that I really don't like going into. Once I do that, expose myself, my vulnerability, it sort of like mends the relationship a little bit. Like even if that person did harm me, unjustifiably, like it doesn't matter after that. I'm healed, and that allows me to be open to, you know, any sort of further communication with that person. But that's all I got.
All right. Our next reading is also on page 83. If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity and we will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them.
Dan, alcoholic.
Hey.
It's funny. One thing that kind of struck me, really, just a couple months ago, we were reading through this at my home group, and the part about fear of people and of economic insecurity will leave us. I can get like really anxious and shy in big group settings. I'm cool with like a few people. It's great. I'm having an awesome time. It was like a huge crowd. I was just like, oh, okay, like I'm just kind of, I can be a bit of a wallflower sometimes, and I'm okay with that. But that's just naturally me. But The fear of them, or the fear of economic insecurity, will leave us. And I don't know, it's like when we read it that day, the fear part stuck out to me more than it ever had, because it's not that, something could happen and I could get walked off my job again randomly because the company cut the job altogether, not even because I did something wrong or anything. So that is a economic insecurity. I'm not secure in that moment, but I'm not afraid of it, and I didn't realize that that's what was happening in that moment when I did get laid off my job. Well, we're married now, but she was my girlfriend at the time. We were engaged already. She went back to New York for the summer. I was back in my parents' house for the summer. The money just got jacked up. We were trying to figure it out. And she was coming down for her birthday on September 12th. I got laid off on September 11th. So my first thought was, like I said, was for them to just not like stop crying, like it's fine. But then my next thought was, stay, like, she's coming down here. Like, what kind of birthday is that? You know what I mean? It's like, happy birthday. I lost my job while we're trying to save money to move back in together. And then the next thing I did was call a friend in the program. Who does that? I don't do that. I don't do stuff like that. I was not afraid of the economic insecurity. I was more so like, it was solutions based. I was solutions driven. I started it just, and I believe that some of those thoughts just came to me in that moment. A drink never crossed my mind. I used to drink every day. I used to go to sleep holding my bottle so I would remember where they were. Like, I used to sleep in my car because I couldn't drink at my parents' house. Like, it was, that's just how I lived. So for me to not throw any type of pity party or want to kill myself or any of those things that I would normally do, normal Diane, without this program. And it's like, now that I've been working this thing for a while, because at that time it had been about 4 years since I come back in the rooms and that happened. And it's like, my first thought is, how is this going to affect my partner, my future spouse? How is this going to affect her? What are some things that we can do? How can I still help her have a good birthday in spite of this? And it was just, that baffles me to this day. Clearly, I'm tongue-tied. I don't even know how to go about that. I would never have done that without this. I would have never have thought that way. Especially to not drink over. I drank over less. I drank when I was happy. I drank when I was sad. I'm an alcoholic and I love to drink, and I didn't even think about it. That used to be my pacifier, and I didn't need a pacifier. I needed a solution. And I found that in here, man. It's a beautiful thing. The promises, they come true in my life when I need them. And I don't feel all of it all the time every day, but daggone, when I need it, it's there. And to me, that's the spirituality of the program, man. Like, I can't make this up. I didn't make up these steps. I didn't write this book. It's just I practice it the best I can every day. And these things, once I got through the ninth step and continued on, these things started to happen. I had spiritual experiences day zero, for me to call my previous sponsor that I had ghosted for 6 months. As soon as I get out of jail and say, hey, I need help, she said, let's go to a meeting. And we went to a meeting and she took me right back on, like we had been talking every day. That's a spiritual experience for me. I wouldn't have picked up the phone for me, but she did. But these promises come after the ninth step, so it's that makes it even more beautiful to me that each action I take, each step I take closer to my higher power, in a sober life, I get some type of benefit or reward from it, whether I realize it or not. If I seek out that silver lining, I'm gonna find it.
Well, alcoholic.
Absolutely.
So the great weakness of this nine step promises is that they put it exactly halfway through the first 164 pages. So I get all these promises, and then I'm supposed to continue on with the remaining 80 some pages, and it's like, okay, why are you gonna reward me immediately? But then if you look, to the next page, you got the 10 step promises right there. So you got something to keep working for. But what sticks out to me about these promises is we are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. That's, the key word there, a new freedom and a new happiness. That's something The happiness and the freedom that I had before was fleeting, and it probably wasn't even what like pure happiness and freedom looked like. My freedom and happiness, before I got sober, before I came to AA, was, I know I'm getting something tomorrow. I know that I don't have to go to work today because I called out sick because I've been drinking all night. Those are like the free, those are like the fleeting freedom and happinesses that I got before I came to AA. But today, it says I'm going to know a new freedom and a new happiness, and that comes from doing this, things like this ninth step. Like I was saying before, like I have, I go into these weird or just uncomfortable or sad or painful situations with my mom, with my friends, with businesses that I stole from, neighbors that I stole from, and I come out on the other side of it like this, sort of like this slightly cleaner version of blue that is able to like it's able to feel like, a nice day out. Like I'm able to appreciate talking to somebody, before the meeting. I'm not just thinking about blue and what blue wants all the time because I'm having to do these things that I don't want to do. And so that's the new freedom and happiness that I have today. It requires a little bit, like I said in the very beginning, of self-sacrifice, a little bit of uncomfortability, but I get to, I get to revel in God's, greatness by doing so. But then, it falls up at the very end. Are these extravagant promises? We think not. They're being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if we work for them. And I read that every night before I start the step 10, because that last sentence, they will always materialize if we work for them. So I need to remind myself that, this isn't it. I've made all of these amends, and I'm willing to make whatever I have made. And I need to just, keep at it. This isn't a once and done. I'm not just going to make these amends to my friends and assume that I'm never going to hurt anybody ever again. I'm going to make new relationships and I'm going to do new damage to them. It's going to come out of left field. I'm not even going to see what I'm doing to them until, a year down the line when I'm talking to somebody else and they've been through the same experience. So I just need to be vigilant and, mindful that this isn't just a one and done program. This is something that I have to keep going back through, over and over, because I want to experience that new freedom and new happiness. That's all I got.
Right on. We've got a few minutes left. David, would you like to button up this delightful interlude?
Like, sure. Did I have the paragraphs? Hi, everybody. I'm an alcoholic named David. Oh, I'm grateful to be here and grateful to be sober tonight. That was an amazing meeting. Thank you. I've been, my mind's been all over the place in this. And I'm grateful that we didn't read about it and neither of the panelists said anything about it. So I feel perfectly free to say there's no such thing as living amends. Yay, I said it. That's just my opinion. Go ahead and discard it. But the book talks about direct amends, and it talks about going to our Creator in the morning and asking to be shown the way of patience, tolerance, kindliness, and love. Being a good son to my mother does not amend what I did in the past. And I'm just lit by this because there may be some wrongs I can never fully right. Period. I mean, there's some stuff I just got to live with. I can't give my mother back her peace of mind that I stole. I think of it's mostly women, but I mean, because I'm a violent, marauding, kick the doors off the jams kind of. I make people feel unsafe, and I can't give that back. And I love what was shared too about the long reconstruction, because like my children have never seen me drink. If I tell my children I'm going to be there at 8 o'clock, they 100% believe I'm going to be there at 8 o'clock because that's their experience their whole life. My family is still like, well, you can flip a coin on David. he is. He may or may not be. So a couple of things too, like I love, like if we're painstaking about this phase of our development, I used to think about that literally, like I got to take the pain of showing up and making these amends, right? And then somebody helped me out with a dictionary, and painstaking is done with great care and thoroughness. So if I'm willing to come to this task with great care and thoroughness, then these things absolutely will come to pass. And the thing that I'm always at pains to share is what my sponsor told me, and it's just I always want to share because it's never ill-served me. When we went over my 8-step list, and like a lot of people, he had me divided into ready, willing, able, not sure, no way will I ever make amends to this person. And he was gentle with me. I mean, he was like, okay, let's start with the ready, willing, and ables. And sure enough, as the ready, willing, and ables went, the I'm not sure abouts became clearer, and the ones I was never going to do came right in. I have a friend of mine who said her sponsor had to do that, and then said, we're going to start with the no ways. And I was like, oh, that's gutsy. Anyway, what he told me, and it's just never failed me. He just said, David, you're done being sorry. Now you get to go out and be wrong. You've been sorry all your life. Go be wrong about stuff. And being wrong about stuff is, in my case, a learned skill. It did not come naturally to me, but I'm wrong about stuff frequently. I have never admitted I was wrong about something and had anyone ever argue with me. They tend to agree with me. Yep, that's 7:55. Thank you.
Right on. We're going to pass the baskets in accordance with the seventh tradition. Seventh tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meetings can take place. Are there any AA-related announcements? Hey, James.
This meeting next Monday night will be meeting here again. The basement will be usually this tied up or.
Allison.
Allison, alcoholic. District 32 will be having a traditions workshop. No, it's not as boring as it sounds. The title is What's It For Me? So, for all of us being kind of self-centered and selfish alcoholics, this should be a fun workshop. It'll be at Emmanuel Episcopal Church a week from Saturday from 9 to 1. We will have refreshments, and it should be a lively discussion between knowledgeable panelists and what we can all do to make sure that they stay intact. Thank you.
That's for sure.
Blue alcoholic.
Hey, Blue.
I'm the treatment dude for the Tidewater area. And we have a couple of openings coming up this week on Thursday, one for B-Bold at 2 p.m. and one for NMCP at 7 p.m. There's a couple others throughout the month, but Ben will probably take those. But just for this week only, we have a couple on Thursday that need to be filled. So if anybody's interested, you can see me after the meeting. Thanks.
So Thursday at what time?
Thursday at 2 and Thursday at 7.
Thursday at 2 here in Norfolk, and Thursday at 7, where is that one?
NMCP. And
what is that?
Portsmouth, Naval Medical Center, Portsmouth.
Okay. If you have a desire to serve your community, please come see Blue at the end of the meeting. Any other announcements? Yes, Randy. Hey, Randy. Where is it, Randy? All right. 7 o'clock, October 23rd. Okay. Anybody else? Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. I don't know if literature is available, frankly. Is it?
We have big books. We got big books.
There are big books here. That's available.
Bag of books.
Bag of books. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to come talk to me. If you're a little shy, you can send us an email at info@simpleactions.net. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside. Stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. Meeting after the meeting. All are invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella just up Colonial Avenue. In closing, can we all thank the panel again? Thanks to all who participated, especially getting us reoriented in a new room tonight and leading the way up here. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to come say thank you to Blue and Diane. And Elizabeth has volunteered to read the last few paragraphs on page 164.
Elizabeth Alcoholic. Hey, Elizabeth. Vision for you, made on page 164. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly discern, but obviously you carry and great events will come to pass to you and countless others. Abandon yourself to God as you read us. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join me. May God bless you and keep you until then.
All right. Are we going to circle up or is it too much? Let's circle up and say the Lord's Prayer.
It's going to be more like a squirt.
Yeah. Have a good offering.
An amoeba.
Yep.
I just said I love the way my voice sounds in this room. Can you tell? And Jerome goes, so much for humility. I really do like the way it sounds. Can you tell? Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not to temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Amen.